All right, this is Pure Decking for September 20th, 1942. I think this is show 39, and what did I say? There's Sard right in the middle of the freaking intro. So
yeah, we've had people showing up in my show list today.
That's true. Just, they kept coming in like as the show went on. We just acquired more people. So
hi, everybody.
Show has upgraded to 5.
Hi, Dr. Sard.
Don't forget to introduce yourself.
Right, right.
This is operating on me.
All
why
right,
not,
this
BSD. I know your face is connected to your arm.
Nice.
Need a doctor? Why not Zoidberg?
There you go. But let's see here. Where was I? This is Pure Decking, the show about things that interest me. I'm Morps. Tonight we have the BSV, the Fox, the Heavy, and Sard.
What? What the hell was that?
I don't know.
Everyone gets third person but me?
Well, I know you don't suffer from multiple personality syndrome. As far as I know, the rest of them do.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yes, I'm the least insane person here.
Right, because we all believe that.
Fool.
Wow. This is going to be the most broken and... Anyways, moving on. Programming notes. The I Have Nothing archives have been caught up on the Galaxy 15 site.
It's about goddamn time.
Yes, this is good news for people who like crazy people on the internet and bad news for people who like bugging me about archives. So,
yay. I have to switch to bugging you about Minecraft updates, so there's something to be done.
Yeah, I'll just shut that server down if it gets on my nerves. just keep that in mind.
Don't upset the deity of the server.
All right.
But Morps, I've already made so many statues in your honor. Have you logged in recently?
Actually, no.
I've built like 30 giant penises just for you.
Oh, I should have my soundboard up if we're going to go this route.
Winning.
There it is. So, there we go. Yeah, I'll get another one up while we're... A couple of other good standard soundboard things to have here just because you never know when you're going to need
it. Space.
So... but that's really the only station news I have. The site's probably going to be quiet for the next few weeks. I've got a whole lot of stuff going on that I need to handle. So I'm also quite aware I'm going to miss I Have Nothing on the next two I Have Nothings, actually, assuming they happen. Because I don't think anybody still found the Major or his body, one or the other. Mm. So.
Well, if we find either one, we can always clone a new Wob.
Yeah, but then you got to wait the 30, you know, the 15 years for it to get to the point where we can actually have it on the internet and reading and, you know, well, speaking coherently. I mean, you might be able to get it at 12. I don't know.
I've gotten it to speed up growth. It just has a few mutations, like five arms and a giant head. But
well, the five arms is
easy. Very tiny a penis.
Oh, I didn't know you grow Asians.
Well, the five arms isn't such a big deal. You know, chainsaw will take care of that problem. But, So, moving on.
Fuck that, dude. He can wield 5 chainsaws.
There you go. I want to see him juggle. Now, so, probably the biggest piece of tech news to drop over the last week was that the Windows 8 development preview came out. Has anybody but me actually looked at this thing?
Yeah.
Yes,
there's no longer a blue screen of death.
Yeah, they changed the blue screen of death to a smiley or a sad smiley.
A very unhappy smiley, yes.
Yeah. They're going the way of the sad Macintosh.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me sad in the pants.
Well, I don't know. I loaded it up on a spare laptop, and I was goofing around with it. It's essentially still Windows 7. Like, I dropped a bunch of my standard programs on it. Surprisingly enough, the developer preview does not pass the Windows Genuine Advantage validation check.
Wow.
But I tell you what, I sure hope they have an option in the final release to turn off that retarded tablet interface on desktop machines.
Dog, I heard you like fingerprints on your screen.
Yeah.
So I gave you a fucking touchscreen interface for your desktop.
Well,
no, that I've heard the same thing, dude. Yeah. It'll be tablet interface, or you can have the regular desktop if you're going to run it on a desktop system, so it'll go either way.
Yeah,
it's just
going to
be like classic.
It's much
mode.
Like Fox. It goes both ways.
Well, I mean, I kind of see what they're trying to pull off here because they've redone their library set to go with it. They're actually changing out. .NET's no longer going to be their primary library set. They're developing something new.
Which is just hilarious, I think.
Yeah, what is it, the Metro?
Silverlight and .NET that they like are eliminating them from their standard code repositories or whatever you want to call it. Like, that totally fucked over all of those developers.
Well, yeah, because I'm actually looking at a lot of .NET code right now, and it's just like, Well, I'm not sure they're actually getting rid of it, because they're saying that you can still hit the new library set from .NET. So I'm not quite sure what they think they're trying to pull here. But, yeah, I can kind of see where they're going, where if you've got the same operating system for both your desktop machines and your tablets, that, you know, you don't have to redevelop your applications, you can just kind of run it, but... At the same time, I've got shit to do. I don't need my start menu to take up the entire screen.
Oh, well, that's why you have multiple monitors. Jeez.
Oh, dude, it does it on multiple screens. I hooked that laptop up to a monitor, and that tablet interface covered both of them. It was retarded.
No shit, like automatically, huh?
Well, it didn't look right, I'll tell you that.
Oh.
I heard you like the Mac dock, so I got you this.
So we might talk about that one here later, just to maybe not. I've got Windows 8 down in the topic section again, but we've already kind of hit everything there is to hit on it, because what they've put out, I mean, there's all these, you know, rumors and stuff going around about it and things we don't really know what's up, but the actual development preview, it's Windows 7 with a new interface bolted on it.
That's pretty much every update of Windows, though.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know. They NT, they actually rewrote a bunch of shit.
Okay, well, yeah, every standard, like, regular jack-off user.
Yeah.
Release of it,
yeah.
Windows.
I was going to say every other release is that.
So
you have the release that is the pretty update but runs like shit, and then the update after that still looks pretty but actually runs decent.
Boy, I can't wait for Windows 9.
That's what everyone should be saying. Who gives a fuck about 7? It's going to suck.
Yeah. Windows 69. Anyways,
all right.
Giggity giggity. I need that on the soundboard.
Giggity 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 goo.
There it is. So, anyways, and I gotta finish building that controller for the soundboard. That thing's still sitting in pieces. Moving on. Next one up. This one's just kind of fun. Iran added a filter to their border routers to recognize Tor traffic and block it. And Tor very quickly discovered that they were doing that and had a fix within the day. And the fix was on the relay side, so that you don't even really have to update the client.
That is awesome.
So
I know what Tor is, but I don't remember if it's open source or not.
Ooh. Yeah, I think good bits of the Tor stuff is open source. I'd have to double check that. I don't remember off the top of my head.
I was just going to make a good comment, say, yay, open source, you rock, because, you know, you come out with patches that freaking quick for stupid shit like that. But I'll look it up while we're talking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tor, I love Tor as it is just because it it just subverts everything people try to do. It's like, oh, yeah, we don't want you looking at this on the internet. Oh, you're using Tor. Fuck.
We'll block Tor. You've made the internet laugh.
Yeah, the only problem with that is, you know, then you approach things from the other side where you're actually doing a network administration, and it's just like, oh, fuck. Go ahead, BSV.
I was just laughing.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to say something. But I have found, actually, in the network that I'm actually supposed to be defending, I have found a very, very useful thing to do is occasionally go hit up the Tor project server list and just make sure none of my IPs are in it. Because I don't get me wrong, I love Tor, but running a Tor exit node is scary.
Yeah, that's their new strategy, is basically to take those out. So I don't know. We'll see.
So anyways, this one's kind of fun. I don't know if you guys would actually know the company name. It's from Ars Technica. But there's a company called PaxFire, and that's the company that goes in and puts the boxes in your ISP that when you mistype a URL, you get some janky auto search page.
Yep.
And they started using these proxy servers to hijack search results Because I in the article they were writing it up like this thing was, I've got a whole bunch cut and pasted into the notes here. I don't think I'm going to read this verbatim, but they're going on about how like Chrome doesn't have messed up URLs anymore because it'll just take you straight to Google, assuming it was a Google search if it's not a valid URL. So now they're starting to try to just straight up intercept the Google and the Google search or whatever you set your browser to, and punch it through their, you know, sponsored search engine so they can still make their money, even though your browser is now configured to just ignore them. And there's a class action lawsuit suing them, saying that what they're doing is violating the Wiretap Act and other consumer protection laws. And essentially, PaxFire is countersuing, saying that they're slandering, or not slander, libel, and a bunch of, you know, what else did they put in here? It's like torturous interference with its business relationships, and that's torturous as in tort law, not not torture. And let's see here.
Let me translate that into English. We are going to financially bankrupt you by making you pay for a bunch of lawyers.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But essentially, they got into a privileged location with ISP selling them this DNS service of, oh, somebody mistyped a URL. We'll just punch them through to a Google search, show them ads, and then we'll cut you in on the ad money. And then they, you know, when other things started going around that, like Google Chrome just searching straight from the bar, and I think Firefox will do that now too. If you just try to search straight from the address bar, it'll still do it. And so they started abusing that privileged position to man in the middle of searches. It's unfortunately, because of the way, you know, you sign away everything when you do a user agreement with your ISP, this is probably not illegal. It's not good, but it's probably not illegal. So, you know, because yes, technically your ISP can man in the middle you. Surprise, surprise. And maybe you should use Tor.
This is going to kind of be like Tor, though, or any of the other things where they sit there and they spend, you know, tens of millions of dollars figuring out a way to intercept your search, and then Google or somebody will release an update like 2 weeks later. Boom, fixed. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's happening at the ISP level, and it's concerning to me because if you have things going on at the ISP level, there's not really a hell of a lot you can do about it short of going through a VPN or going through Tor or just encrypting everything so they can't do anything to your traffic. And yeah. I think that's the way we're going to have to actually start to go if they're going to start doing this shit. And the worst part about it is, you know, everybody thought it would be for tracking or for looking for, you know, illegal stuff. I actually wouldn't have a problem with it if they were trying to filter out, I don't know, kiddie porn. But no, they're doing it to show you fucking ads.
Exactly. It's not like I don't pay my internet bill on time. Leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah, there's that.
I don't have a problem. If you want to offer me, you know, poor folk, you know, nearly free internet service, and then hit them with a bunch of ads, I'm okay with that. That's a good business model. But for those of us that pay the full bill, leave us alone.
But corporate companies have to drain you of every last penny they can milk from you.
And I mean, come on, Heavy. We all know that every porn pop-up you see, you just consider porn that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah. What's your point? If they did that, if they were, you know, discerning, that would be all right. But they're not. All of a sudden, I'm getting stuff like, you need to buy a case of diapers from, you know, local big box retail store. And I'm like, no, I really don't.
Oh, fuck.
You know, that's kind of loud. I need to adjust the volume on the soundboard there.
I am not 80 years old or 2 years old.
Are you sure?
Mostly.
It's like, wait, oh, God, when was I? Oh. I don't know. I have considered buying the adult diapers before for particularly long LAN parties.
Oh, that would work.
It's an excellent idea.
Or next time RU decides we're going to have to do a 24-hour podcasting session for, you know, whatever anniversary of I Have Nothing.
Oh, come on. You know half the people that have the wireless mics just take them into the bathroom anyway.
Yeah.
We now all you're know Major did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you heard the flushing on the freaking... Anyways. So... Next one here, this one's just funny. SpyEye is a Trojan with backdoor capabilities that attempts to steal blah, 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 blah. SpyEye merged with Zeus. It's a Trojan. It connects to a CNC server, and it tries to steal your banking information. This thing is a horrible piece of software. But here's the really fun part. There's a blind SQL injection in the CNC server for SpyEye. If you've ever looked at the SpyEye kit, and it gets leaked from time to time, and it's always fun to pull down the torrent and look at it. It actually has a little, you know, Ajax-y Web 2.0 control panel, you know, from a browser, and that has web application vulnerabilities in it. So your botnet is getting botnetted.
Yo, dog, I heard you like botnets.
Yeah. Inception.
I was waiting for someone to do it. If no one was, well, I was going to.
This makes the perfect thing. I mean, think about it. If you've got a ton of script kiddies spreading your botnet around, you know, and then they get it specifically widespread, you just go in and take it over. You
know? That happens, actually, a lot. The underground goes back and forth on who's controlling these things. Because SpyEye, well, the thing is, SpyEye is not just like one. It's not like the Stormworm was a long time ago, right? It's not one thing. It's actually a kit that's sold to people who are looking to set up their own botnets. You know, they don't even, half the time the people running these botnets don't even really know what they're doing anymore. They've just bought software and they're using it. You know, it's crimeware or kit packages or whatever you want to call them these days. But so there's lots of SpyEye botnets out there.
Yeah.
And it just turns out there's a nice blind SQL. Now, what's even funnier is there's some people disputing who actually discovered this. Apparently, whoever wrote it up and sent it in. I got it from Hacker News, and that's why I left the... They had the name of the person, or the handle of the person who discovered the SQL injection. But then down in the comments, there's a bunch of people disputing that person found it. They're saying, oh, he stole it from this other place. So I'm just not going to mention either of them, because I don't know.
Okay, that's fair enough.
So... Moving on, this one's from Torrent Freak. Mass settlement lawsuits against alleged BitTorrent users have the potential of bringing millions in revenue. Recent rulings in U.S. district courts are going to severely cut into that. Essentially, these are the lawsuits where they bring in several thousand John Does, and they bring them in on a single suit so that they can do the discovery to get ISPs to turn over, you know, who these people actually are. Well, the judges are kind of figuring out the game, and they're starting to go, you're not actually suing most of these people, you're just sending them settlement letters. Like, almost nobody is actually going to court with these things, so they're going to make them start filing each individual one as a separate case.
Well, the real answer is, we want our money.
Yeah.
If you're going to get a big pile of money, so are we. Have fun.
Well, that's the truth, though. There's actually numbers in the article. Apparently, every case costs around $350 to file, and you have to file that $350 for each potential settlement. And how many people are just going to actually tell you to go get bent? Because my understanding is a lot of times if you say, you want to try to sue me, you go right ahead. A lot of times they don't even bother. They're just trying to get the settlement out of you.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I think about damn time.
That's what I'm kind of thinking, too.
Yeah, hopefully it'll cut down on some of these bullshit lawsuits. I spilled coffee on my balls!
either that or it'll actually fund the court system properly. Either way, yeah.
We could have an entire thing about how well our government is funded, but this is not a political show for good reason.
Yeah.
So, although speaking of our government doing fun things, this one's from Wired. A New York state worker has accused government officials of violating the state constitution after they installed a GPS tracker on his private car and recorded his whereabouts for a month. The State Department of Labor placed the device secretly on the worker's car without warrant and tracked the vehicle for 24 hours a day, including on weekends and during a week-long family vacation, in order to find the evidence of timesheet violations.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's no loophole around a warrant for timesheet violations.
Let's see here. Lead attorney on the case, NYCLU senior staff attorney, good God, that guy's got a title, Corey Straughton, told Threat Level that they weren't disputing that the Department of Labor had cause to investigate Cunningham's whereabouts, just the tactic officials used to do it. They can have all the calls they want. There can be a slam dunk case in theory. But nonetheless, the government simply doesn't have the power to track the movements of people and their families in their private cars for 24 hours a day just to uncover more evidence of workplace misconduct. That's kind of actually arrogant of this Department of Labor to go putting GPS trackers on people's cars because they're looking for timesheet violations.
I mean, for Christ's sake, get an RFID badge, like punch in, punch out of the door, and track them that way.
There are easier and less expensive and less illegal ways to do this. So why don't you just, I don't know, put a camera on the time clock?
I bet you it costs more to pay for this tracking system than the time clock violations. I mean, really?
I'm sure it did.
Well, I don't know.
I saw this story also on Slashdot, just kind of shook my head. That's just, it's the same deal with the, I think it was the CIA that put a tracker on that college kid's car without his knowledge, and he actually found it and put pictures of it.
Yeah, I think, didn't he try to sell it on eBay?
Yeah.
And they showed up and said, you have to give it back?
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, it's like 20 grand or whatever, like, you know?
I would be like, no, I don't. This is my property now. You left it on my property.
Right. Hello, black market.
It's like, oh, you're tracking me. I'd like to see your warrant, please.
Exactly. And I never followed up on that, but I bet you nothing happened.
Oh, I'm sure nothing happened.
Yeah, it's fucked up, that kind of stuff.
People, well, I mean,
rights get violated and they get tracked. I mean, can you imagine if someone tracked you and saw where you went every single freaking day?
He goes to Walmart at 3 a.m. and then he goes to the whorehouse at 5 p.m.
But I mean, the thing is, like, if you call the government out on it, all they'll have to do is be like, yep, you're a terrorist. Oh, look, write a habeas corpus out the window. Have fun in Guantanamo, fag.
Yeah. Well, it's like when the Department of Labor can say that you're a terrorist, you might have issues.
Yeah.
I'm not very happy with our government at the moment. I'm just going to throw that out there. Anyways, let's see. Moving on. This one's kind of funny. Apparently, uTorrent got hacked on 9/13/2011, approximately 4:20 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. uTorrent web servers were compromised. Our standard Windows software download was replaced with a type of fake antivirus scareware program. And if you go to the BitTorrent.com blog, they've got removal instructions if you need them. I'm just thinking, who can you trust anymore? They're actually going after the software vendors to replace it with this damn scareware.
That's funny. Oh, well. What are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, if these guys are really that desperate to, you know, get a hold of your machine, they're going to do whatever it takes. You just got to, I don't know, we can't even go to friggin' any of the repositories because they've been getting hacked too.
Yeah, Linux.com got hacked not too long ago. And I was just thinking, you know, a lot of open source websites, they like to put up that MD5 hash of their archive so you can verify that it's, you know, the correct archive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if somebody can hack your page to change your download link, I think they can change the MD5 hash on that's listed on the page, too.
I've thought that exact same thing for a long time, and I've always thought, you know, those things are freaking pointless. At least it seems
that way. Well, I never bothered to check them. I mean, the only thing they serve is, you know, did the file download correctly?
But even then, like, that's, I don't know, it just brings me back to, like, dial-up days. Like, oh, did this file actually get corrupted and downloading it or not? You know, it's...
I'll check it if the file's messed up, but other than that.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen anymore, I don't think. I don't know. I personally haven't used them, but we're probably going to anger a bunch of nerds, and they're going to be pounding our doors.
Well, it's cool that they provide it and all. I'm just, if they can change your link.
Exactly.
So, although, since we're mentioning Linux getting hacked, this one's fun. Where did I get this? I don't know where I got this from. Ubuntu Vibes, I think. Desura Linux client is now available. Desura is a Steam-like game store, and they've put out a Linux client. They've actually got several Linux games on their site.
Sweet!
That's what I'm thinking. Good at them. Certainly, they don't have the catalog that Steam does, but it looks like they're working on it.
That's fine. Whatever it takes. I mean, actually, to get gaming on Linux is one of the holy grails to get it accepted as a general desktop client. So,
well, given the way Windows 8 is going, I think we're going to see quite the pickup in OS X and Linux.
Well, there's a lot of people that are actually having good luck with Ubuntu. A lot of us have been, you know, just going, "Wow, you don't have Windows? Well, we'll just put this on here and it'll work." And for web browsing and, you know, like gaming and stuff.
But Ubuntu's doing some weird shit with their interface too. I don't know if you've looked at their Unity interface. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I haven't either. Honestly, I'm becoming starting to shun Ubuntu where I used to embrace it, and it's just Unity and the last two releases, I think I'm still running 10.04 at work because it's the last one that actually worked well.
You know, I've had great luck with the latest couple of releases of Linux Mint because they haven't screwed up their GNOME, and other than that, it still has, you know, it all just kind of works out of the box, which is what Ubuntu used to do.
Yeah, exactly, and I take that back. I am running Mint at work, the 10.0 version or whatever, you know, copy that they do. That's just really nice. I don't know if anyone else knows, but Linux Mint also includes all of the MP3 codecs and all video codecs, Adobe Flash, all these things pre-installed, which would be freaking great if Ubuntu did. That way, so you don't have to dick with it.
Yeah.
If it's going to be a desktop app OS, you might as well not dick with it. I mean, that would be, in my eyes, one step up above Windows, because right now you get a new computer, what do you have to do? Oh, I need to go get Adobe Flash if it's on sale. I need to go get Adobe Reader, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's not even new machines, actually. I've got a couple of older machines that, well, like one of them, HP, will not acknowledge exists at all. Like, well, they acknowledge it exists, but you can't get the drivers for it. So it's not on their website. So, or now I've got a few other machines like that where getting the drivers to these machines is a real hassle because you got to go dig through archives and kind of hope somebody's got them and it's not full of viruses and all this other shit. Whereas you can just drop Linux Mint on there and it works and it picks up all the hardware and you're not hunting for drivers for hours. And, you know, I actually used to stay away from things like Mint and a few others because I thought, oh, these are beginner's list, you know, distros. I need to get stuff done. So then it's like, you know, I'd go mess with Gentoo or something like that. And now it's completely the other way around. It's like, I don't have time to fuck with this. I just need my system to work.
I'm in the exact same boat, dude.
So, you know, speaking of somebody who's actually done a full stage one Gentoo build, if you've got the time.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Sorry. When I first started getting into Linux, I had a buddy that was really into Linux as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, what operating system did he suggest for me as a newbie beginner? I've never typed the command make in my life.
Oh God, and he put you on Gentoo? /
configure, you know? Oh yeah, here, let's install Gentoo and I'll show you how to use all that. Dude, blew my mind. There's no fucking way.
Well, the manual for Gentoo is awesome. I'm not gonna, they've got it documented very well. You can learn it all from there, but I wouldn't start with Gentoo.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Like I said, I was brand freaking new. It's not a good starting place.
Yeah.
So, hey, your new driver, here's your Formula One car. Tried to crash, Timmy.
Exactly. That's actually a pretty good analogy. Well, we'll do this last news story here, and then we'll go into our musical break. So I got this one off Boing Boing. Thingiverse users have uploaded a design for an AR-15 magazine that holds 5 rounds, is easy to expand to as many rounds as the material will hold without snapping, and an AR-15 lower receiver, a component whose ownership is prescribed or regulated in most of the United States. Now, I personally am not sure how I feel about using the very high quality, let me tell you, ABS plastic that they send you to use with the you know, the 3D printers.
Well, I'd use the shit out of the ABS plastic to make a nice mold.
Well, in that article, they actually talk about, yeah, obviously you don't want to use this with a 5.56 round. It'll blow up in your face. But they were suggesting possibly using it for a 22, which that I think it probably would. But you still have to really make sure that the barrel gets tied into the receiver properly and doesn't get stripped out. But,
well, and not only that, you're going to have your bolt, all your other metal parts, like that metal plus plastic, just it's going to wear out the channels after a while. It's going to start fucking up and jamming. Yeah, and don't even talk about it getting hot. As soon as you start firing a few rounds through it, it's going to heat right up. I just think this would be nice to, you know, oh, hey, look, this little piece in my lower receiver's fucked. look, I can print a new one instead of having to go through an FFL and get all this other shit, but...
But yeah, also, to be fair,
BSV.
There are, instead of just the ABC plastic that's standard, there are higher-end plastics that are both stronger and...
Yes, there are, but can your MakerBot or RepRap actually melt those? Because those have much higher melting points, don't they?
Yeah, you'd probably need a higher-end printer, but
yeah,
there is a... You pretty much, in the future, it'll probably be easier to get a hold of printers like that, so... Wouldn't be... And maybe able to see guns like this in the future, but... They and may also just purposes.
Sorry, BSC.
But yeah, they known stuff. They probably may just restrict printers like that.
Yeah, I don't like that idea.
No, but I mean, you look at the lower receiver here. I mean, it's really not that much going on inside. I mean, your trigger group's not there. None of your really intricate moving parts are there. It's a chunk of metal, primarily when you buy it. All the other, you know, your safety, your, you know, magazine release, your trigger group, everything else, that's all separate little bits and pieces that you can order standalone from any, you know, part store on the internet or locally. You can just walk right in.
But let's look at a Glock. What parts do they actually make out of metal still, even though most of the gun is plastic? The receiver and the barrel.
Well, what about the magazine?
I'm not talking about the whole plastic thing. I'm talking about like the quality of the printer needed to print one of these out. I mean, this thing, other than the threads, and most people that would be able to, you know, forge this out of actual metal would probably have something to put the threads in themselves. So I don't think it's a quality of printer issue. I mean, until you can just like download gun.exe and just have it print off an entire working, you know, replica, I don't think they're going to have to worry about like all the small intricate moving parts that they already give out for free. This is just the one piece they've decided to regulate, and it happens to be fairly simple in design.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the second someone actually does this and tries to fire something, I have a feeling, I mean, the ATF will obviously... I mean, it's illegal. You can't make your own firearms. You have to have a federal firearms license, and it has to have a serial number, and there's certain things like that for it. But I was thinking this would be more cooler for making your own airsoft guns would be kind of cool. Mm. Or, you know, making a your own training weapons. You know, you use an M4. Okay, well, I could print off a M4 just like mine and use it. You know, if you make all the parts move, then you could practice with it for muscle memory and things like that.
Well, I like the airsoft idea because most airsoft guns are just a hunk of plastic with a spring in it.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
And
they charge you $500 or more for them for a big hunk of plastic.
You know, it does raise the reason I threw this one in is, one, the firearms aspect of it is just fun. And again, I'm not, like I said, somebody prints out a plastic gun and goes to fire it. Oops.
Sorry about your face.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, if you fire it a couple of times, don't fire it again. Just stop. Because it's not, I don't think it would hold up very well to repeated use. Just because, well, and the plastic, let's be real, the plastic that most people are getting for their, you know, they're talking about the cupcake things, like the thing Suave has, right? The plastic you're getting from those is not the highest quality plastic in the world.
Yeah, you can break that easily with little first.
Yeah, so it's not... You know, I almost wonder... I don't think you could actually print a working lower receiver. They just put up the design for it.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you'd use this for is as a mold.
Yeah.
You'd get this, you'd dump the entire thing in a bucket of plaster Paris, set that up, and then, you know, pour aluminum into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this raises the question of, you know, what happens when you have designs for illegal objects? I think we had the story a while back where somebody had made something that was a movie prop and then uploaded the design and they got a DMCA takedown. You know, so, you know, it's one thing when it's just something out, you know, somebody's copywritten a shape, I guess. I don't know how you do that, but I guess they can. But now we're getting into stuff where they've actually restricted, you know, a component for one reason or another, and now you've got the design for it out there on the internet. I personally don't have a problem with that, but I'm wondering about who's going to be dumb enough to print out one of these things and actually try to use it.
Whoever they are, they can get a nice shiny Darwin Award for trying.
Yeah. So I'm getting a note from Knox telling me to back the fuck off my microphone. So that the crackling may just be my voice, dude. It's kind of screwed up right now. So anyways, I can probably turn my own channel down a little bit too. I was messing with it earlier, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little screwed up. So let's go into our musical break, and then we will come back and do Digital Dojo. Oh, this track is off of Nivelle Del Mar. It's a Welcome Wilderness. Up here, I've gotten my White Russian, and during the
why are you racist against Russians?
I'm not. It's a drink, vodka, Kahlua, and milk.
Nice. That was a joke.
I always have a fear when mixing alcohol and dairy.
Yeah, sometimes you get it to curdle.
Yeah, the cement mixer just doesn't really appeal to me too much.
You don't like solid liquor.
Only if it comes in candy form.
Well, I'm going to need... Knox is telling me there's more crackling. I'll have to check my cables. But I can't do that during the show. At least not very effectively. Anyways, so Sard threw me an interesting story here during the break there. Apparently, this is off Slashdot, Intel shows real VNC embedded into the BIOS. This strikes me as a god-awful idea. They're going on about how using VNC, one can now power down, power up, reboot, and go into the BIOS and even mount disk images on the network. Why? I mean, yeah, you've been able to, you know, they're talking about how you can do it in IPMI, but most people don't have access to an IPMI console. It's you know, kind of a specialty piece of gear. Not a lot of people even know it exists. VNC, however...
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
It's like, oh, and how much you want to bet people don't set a password on this? Because who the hell sets a BIOS password? I mean, my God. Or if they do, it's going to be something standard and easily guessable like your company's name. So I'm going to be able to write a script using VNC to just start doing all kinds of nasty stuff to your BIOS. One overflow, and now you're... This just does not seem like something good to expose to the network. I mean, I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I could see. You're absolutely right. Oh man, yeah, because I could see it definitely not being managed right in a whole load of companies. So, especially financial institutions, which have all of your important financial data.
Yeah. Well, and they're the ones who are going to want to do it because they've got lots of computers.
Yeah.
So.
Or a hospital.
Oh God. Yep. Yeah, why don't we just reboot the x-ray machine while you're inside the giant magnet and nobody can walk in there?
That sounds
It'd be cool, right?
It'd be fine. It'd be great. Hope you don't have any fillings in your teeth. Anyways, so, yeah, especially real VNC. What? Real VNC just had an auth bypass the other day. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about it on the last show, actually. Or maybe the one before that. But it's like, why?
Because that's what they were working with prior to the trade show, and that's what they had set up to run. So
yeah. So anyways, moving on. Time for Digital Dojo. If somebody wants to throw me some...
Digital Dojo! Hi-ya!
Wah!
Ha! Hi! Mushy, mushy.
Yeah, I'm never going to actually have to make a transition sound for that. I'll just always ask you guys to do it. That seems to work. So... This,
You should get the sound effect of a gong, though.
Oh, I do need gong. Just get a real gong, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, there you go. Or you could spend money on it, or you just get it from the internet for free.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I'll get a 3D printer and print out a gong.
I don't know how well that would work.
It wouldn't sound very good.
Click.
Think.
Or no, you hit it too hard. Crack. And just somebody in the background to sit on the piano and go, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Anyways, wow, I'm not incredibly racist. Why do you ask? Anyways. So.
No, really?
Yeah, Network Miner got a release. This is a very nice packet capture and analyzer tool. It will reconstruct files. It'll give you a summary of connections. I use this a lot at work. And Network Miner getting an update is very, very nice. So, we lost Sard. Oh, well. But, yeah, if you've never played with it, it's sort of like Wireshark, except it does a lot of reconstruction of the packets for you, whereas Wireshark is much, much better for showing you what's actually going on in the packets, like actual down to the packet level. Network Analyzer kind of, or Network Miner works up at the, kind of up at the application level. So it'll, you can have it watch your network connection. And it'll reconstruct images, like if you went to a web browser, and if you're on, say, Wi-Fi at, say, Starbucks, you can see the images that everyone is loading up. So I'm just, you know.
That may not be so good.
Yeah, not so good. Fine. But actually, as far as forensics go, if you're trying to figure out why a computer is making some of the connections it's making, it's really handy, because you just watch the connections, and this thing's a lot of time, if it'll be able to reconstruct the files for you. So it's a very handy tool. It's a Windows only one, unfortunately. So I find myself a lot of times, you know, one of my Linux boxes up in the data centers where I do my packet captures, I just bring down the PCAP onto my desktop and let Network Miner process it. Very handy tool. Very nice to see it getting an update. Next up, kind of a lightweight digital dojo, actually. This one's fun. Okay, this is from exploit-monday.com, and the article itself is a quick write-up of how to use PowerShell to hook .NET to pull executables over a system when you don't really have any other network access. You've managed to pop a shell on it, but they're blocking SMB, they're blocking FTP, HTTP, all that good stuff. So this is kind of a, they've got a write-up on how to do it, but that's not the reason I linked this. And it's doing it using PowerShell, so obviously, you know, if you sat down at a machine in your unlimited user account, you might be able to use this to pull in executables and kick them off. Handy if you have, say, an automated keyboard, for example, just a thought, like a teensy. But the real gem of this post is actually down in the comments, because he makes a joke in the PowerShell posting about using MS Paint to drop an EXE across the network. And somebody asks him, what do you mean using MS Paint? And so he's actually got down in the comments of the article, how to use MS Paint to drop executables across the network.
That's just beautiful.
Well, it's a simple thing, too. You could probably do it with most any Windows program that hooks the normal normal dialog boxes. Essentially, you use Paint to try to open the EXE. Paint will throw an error because, you know, you give it a network address or a web address, right? And it'll say, I can't open this. This is an image file. By the way, it was saved here. And it'll give you the directory to the link to the temp directory where it saved it to try to open it. So it's just a way of getting files onto a box. It's kind of fun. I love the MS Paint part just because nobody expects it. So I was fully expecting it to use image data to, you know, like rename an EXE to a JPEG, move it, then, you know, cut, paste, save, that kind of thing, or something fancier than that. I just like, you know, exploiting the Windows dialog boxes. So, Android got an interesting application called Droid Sheep. And it is exactly what you think it is. It is Fire Sheep for Android phones.
Nice.
So, yeah, no longer do you get to watch watch people's laptops as you're walking around the coffee shops to see who's running Fire Sheep and then, you know, take them out back and teach them the meaning of life with a stick. Now you got to watch for people doing it on their phones, too.
Yeah, but I much more often have my phone available in, you know, situations where there's open Wi-Fi. I can just watch and enjoy.
Again, use Tor. So,
yeah. Let's see.
We're already up to 48 minutes. Damn, we haven't even gotten to the topics. We had good news stories. So the final one, this was from Hackavision. This is a nice write-up. Hackavision's got a bunch of good articles actually up on it. Sard, you were asking me the other day about a good place to start. Hackavision would be one of them.
And excellent. Yeah, I just clicked on that link. I'm going to check these guys out.
Yeah, that is a very nice article to getting started with Aircrack NG, which if you want to get into Wi-Fi cracking, that is the tool suite to learn. That is state-of-the-art right now if you want to crack Wi-Fi. So, and in fact, rolling straight into our topics, I had in here to start talking about Windows 8. I think we pretty much covered it in the article up in the news, though. Did anybody want to say anything else about Windows 8? I mean, I've played with it a little bit. The interface is actually not that intuitive.
So. Yeah, I haven't played with it, so.
Yeah, that,
yeah, we'll see. It, you know, I think we need a couple weeks to play around with it and really get into it and start finding out where the flaws and the bugs are, where the nice parts are.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I tell you, if you launch Internet Explorer from their Metro interface, which is the replacement of the start menu, you get a version of Internet Explorer that takes up the whole screen, which isn't so bad because the laptop I was playing with it on didn't have a lot of screen real estate. But when you bring up the controls, it looks like they took the IE for a smartphone and just scaled it up. It looks bad. It's like, really? You think I need buttons an inch across? I mean, really?
No, you need buttons 2 inches across.
So, but I everything else I had down here, I'm pretty sure we covered. I mean, it might be a great interface on a tablet, but I think we pretty much covered that one up in the news story. So, next one here. What do you all think of Wi-Fi cracking? Since I threw that you know, Hackavision article in there.
I actually think it's all right. It's one of those things where it's fun to do, and it depends on what your motivation is. And I know you've listed them here, but if somebody leaves their internet open and you need to like check an email because your internet's down, that's kind of cool. But then there's people that are just not paying for their internet and they're doing shit like downloading, you know.
Well, I've had people actually get back when I was in school, people would corner me. It's like, hey, man, how do you crack into all these Wi-Fi networks? Why? Because I don't want to pay for internet access. Go away.
Yeah.
if you're wanting to steal stuff or just go hack people on the inside, go away. You don't care about the technology. You just want to cause problems. I don't have time for script kiddies. You know, granted, if you really want to know how to do it, I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube videos out there, you know, demonstrating how to use Aircrack, not just, you know, that article I linked is a nice write-up and it explains a lot of good stuff about doing it versus, you know, you go watch a YouTube video of just, you know, replicate idiot's commands and that's how to do it.
If you don't have sufficient Google foo to find this on your own, then you do not deserve the ability to do it.
Although it is really funny to print things out on other people's shared printers, but
yeah, well, there is that.
I know absolutely nothing about doing that.
Fox, nothing, you sound like you have all a story.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I've done it too, so I'm not going to say anything.
For any old people living on the corner of Armstrong Lane in the greater area around here, in the past 4 years, if you came out with your morning coffee in hand, gazed upon your full sheaf of papers in your printer tray, and found that they all contained a gaping asshole and that you were out of red ink.
God.
Got that for ya. Yeah, we were out war driving around one night in a neighborhood. Like, we didn't really think we were going to find much of anything, but there were some old people.
It's surprising how much is still open out there, even today.
And God, this was like, what, Sard, 8 years ago?
Something like that. It was quite a while.
Yeah, it was. But we're driving along, just, you know, we're renaming people's, you know, wireless networks to be like, you know, iHeartTalk, and yeah, just, you know, just funny shit, just resetting their their leases and everything. So it's like, Lost Wire has no internet, and so I mean, we'd probably drummed up a lot of business for like the Geek Squad and shit like that in the area.
Well,
and it'd be pretty funny when they come out and realize that the person they're trying to help, their router is named Nigger Faggot. And the tech is a black guy.
Nice. Oh, man.
But we came across and they had their printer shared. They had their documents shared. Like, they were there's wide open. And like that. So we went on, jumped on there, like, saw a bunch of pictures, pulled them down.
Which house it was because they had pictures of it.
Yep.
Yeah, inside, outside. Hell, if we wanted to sit there and dig deeper, we probably could have found like their, you know, password.txt thing with all their bank account information in it. But nope, we just went on the internet, found a nice picture of Goatsy, sent it to their printer with 50 copies in the queue.
God.
And the only thing I was like, God, I wish they had a webcam that was shared. And you just like sit there and wait, like make some noise, make them come out and just watch them walk over to their printer, pick up the piece of paper.
And scream.
And just the horror on their face.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I've got one too, actually. And I guess I ought to play the story time with Morp's music, but I don't have it loaded up. I didn't actually put a story time in the show today. But, you know, God, this had to be 7 years ago, 8 years ago, maybe. Jeez. We were walking around a local Best Buy. And I had my pocket PC with me. And somebody had plugged, I imagine it was over in their Geek Squad area, they had plugged a Linksys router in and didn't bother to configure it. So I got looking and I realized I could get on Best Buy's network. And yes, those machines on the Wi-Fi listed right there with open shares on them are the cash registers.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I figured this needed somebody's attention. So, of course, we changed the SSID to, say, insecure, reconnected to it, went in, realized they had not even changed the password on the admin console for the Linksys router. So at that point, I actually handed the Pocket PC to a buddy of mine and said, have fun, and walked away. Because I knew he was going to think of much more evil things than I was. So I'm not sure what happened, but next week we went in there, and all of their routers were unhooked. We know this because we saw the stack of them in their Geek Squad booth.
And it's just, you are far too white hat, Morps. You actually have a conscience, don't you?
Yeah, it sucks.
You had to give it away? Dude, Fox and I would have been there. We would have
fucking
helped you.
Morals. I tell you.
All of their display PCs? Oh, let's see. We can get Tub Girl on that one. Meat Spin on all the home pages. God help you if you get access to their, like, their web TV streams on their giant wall of screens up there. Oh, that's like 1080p Meat Spin across the fucking two-story wall and just watch the people flee and vomit.
God. Okay, so anyways, I thought I would just list out some of the tools here, if you're wanting something to Google to get started with here. On Linux, your two big ones are going to be Kismet and Aircrack, actually Aircrack-NG, next generation, I think is what that stands for, or new generation or something. But those are pretty much your staples. Aircrack is state-of-the-art. Kismet is probably the best Wi-Fi scanner I've ever used. And yes, you can hook your GPS unit into Kismet and make, you know, the Google Maps that show where you were when you found, you know, particular Wi-Fi hotspots. That is one thing I've had to explain to quite a few people when you make the war driving maps. The dot on the map is not where the router is. The dot on the map is where you were when you found it. And that makes perfect sense, because how the hell would it know where, you know, omnidirectional signals, or not omnidirectional.
Internet magic!
Yeah. So, on Windows, you've got NetStumbler, and you got Wi-Fi Fofum. Actually, Wi-Fi Fofum has been ported all over the place, but NetStumbler is pretty much your standby on Windows. I haven't really looked for new ones on Windows in a while. You guys know of any new ones out on Windows? Because I know NetStumbler is getting pretty old at this point.
That's kind of all I've used on Windows. I mean,
yeah. I mean, if you're just looking for open stuff, you can use the utilities that came with your card. I mean, that's, you know, Windows has them built in these days. But it is kind of nice getting the full range of information. If you guys have ever played with the spectrum analyzers, what are those called?
Wi-Spy.
Wi-Spy, thank you. Yeah, I've got one of those. Those are a lot of fun just because they actually show you what's going on. And if you've got a channel that's getting a lot of noise from like a microwave or something, that's a good way to play with that, and they've got a fairly nice app that goes with that. Then on the Mac side, of course, you can compile Aircrack and Kismet on the Mac side. Now, it's a pain in the ass to do it. There is a very nice program called Kismac, which actually also has a lot of, it has some of the early gen Aircrack stuff built right into it. And that's a very nice application. I have not actually had as much success. I've done much better with the actual real Aircrack suite than I have with Kismac. But it was running on a netbook that was Hackintoshed and kind of an oddball setup. You all remember that? That's the one I was running around with at Gen Con.
Yes.
Yep.
So, anyways, that's pretty much all I've got.
What are we at?
We're at time, anyways. I've got some more C64 fun, but not terribly much to go over at the minute, and we're pretty much out of time. So. Of course, check out RU's new Open Mic Friday Nights when the broadcast box is working. He had some problems with that last week. I need to get with him and make sure that's sorted out. Of course, I Have Nothing every Saturday, Hugo's Newsreel on Thursdays, the Galaxy 15 radio site, and the Twitter handle. And is it, you guys have anything else you want to plug?
Nameless Review 7.
Nameless Review 7,
Monday.
That's right. I'll be getting that posted tonight or tomorrow. It is uploaded.
And coming soon, a daily morning show from RU46 and myself.
Oh my God. You guys are really going to do daily?
Yeah. We're going to do like 5 minutes.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
What is wrong with you people? Anyways.
We're on the internet.
Yeah, well, that might do it. So, Fox, Sard, you guys got anything else you want to plug besides each other?
Well, see, starting next week, my plugging Sard would be considered adultery.
Ooh.
Hey, fuck, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's just marveling.
I was trying to think of a snappy comeback. I couldn't come in, think of anything.
When you have to think of it, it's okay. Not
if
snappy.
If I wanted my comeback, I would have wiped it off your chin. In other news, Google, after shooting themselves in the foot with their Google Plus, like, look, we're going to make it all enticing and make you wait for it, and then reveal that we're totally going to steal all of your private information.
Yep.
Now everybody can have it, but I think that's a little too late, and I think they're pretty fucked on that adventure.
So, anyways, that has been Pure Decking. We're going to close out now on another Nivelle Del Mar track. I think I've played this one before. It's Sweet Man Like Me.
$20 gold.